Hello and welcome to the second Westport Book Festival podcast. The Westport Book Festival is run on generosity and goodwill, rather than any kind of feasible budget. And our aim has been to offer free events to diverse audiences who share our passion for books, bookshops and fun. We've been creative, dipping into the dressing up box and casting our eye around for new talent, transforming local shops into intimate, innovative venues. And what's more exciting than crisps? You find them everywhere. So we invited Peter Burnett, the author of The Supper Book, to share his researches into crisps. Why do we need crisps? Is there a logic to crisps? These are questions which Peter Burnett does not answer, but he did manage to make a record of everything that he ate over the period of 1 year. And of course, crisps were part of that list. Peter makes for an entertaining companion on our journey through crisps.
I'm going to try and read to you the whole chapter, or the whole list of crisps that I ate in 1 year. And I'll be stopping to talk and possibly discuss on a few of the flavours and brands mentioned. First of all, a few words about crisps and whether or not they are actually a food is a moot point. First thing I guess about them is, in one spot, I've always seen them as the antithesis of food, really. You don't have to cook them, they just appear in these hermetically sealed bags and you tuck in really without a second thought. The introduction to my chapter on crisps says, "We have begun manufacturing on an immense scale foods that are guaranteed not to nourish. Is this a collective suicide or a disease of affluence? The idea of nutrition is dominated by the dichotomy that food that is good is not good for you, and food that is not good is good for you. The contradiction is too great." So I'm going to start with my 4 or 5 page list of crisps, and hopefully we'll get to the end, and I included obviously the gram weightage, so we'll see how many tons of crisps the average person can get through in the period of a year. The first bag was 1 bag of yogurt and green onion kettle chips. The second, 1 bag of salt and vinegar Monster Munch. Now, the other day I was just having a look, refreshing myself on a packet of Monster Munch. I was most disappointed to find that the size of Monster Munch has actually increased again. I don't know if there are any crispophiles out there who have been among the many to have blogged in a rather upset fashion about the fact that when Walkers bought Monster Munch off Smith's, they for some reason reduced the size of them. The old strapline for Monster Munch, you might remember, was the biggest snack money can buy. But that was, of course, before Walkers changed everything. There was, in those days, two different shapes of Monster Munch. The one that we still have today is sort of cycloptic monster, with a sort of circle with eyelashes. But there used to be another one, which represents the gangly monster with the long tongue, if you remember him. Looking at these, of course, these are, as Colin was just reminding me just before we started, corn snacks. We'll be coming to corn snacks and the process of extrusion later on. These actually contain a product called phenylalanine, which is naturally found in breast milk because it is an analgesic and antidepressant substance. So we're going to be putting Monster Munch in our good crisps category this afternoon. Some of them, such as the Pringles that have been passed around, we might have to place in the bad crisp category. I would actually encourage you to eat these because the structure, the chemical structure of phenylalanine is very closely related to that of adrenaline and dopamine. So these are actually highly recommended for your children. 1 bag of lightly salted kettle chips eaten by me. 2 bags of Worcester sauce flavour wheat crunchies. I was looking for some wheat crunchies actually this week. I've not really been able to find any because there's an experiment I really wanted to do with them. The thing you'll notice about wheat crunchies, if you're familiar with them, is when you open the packet, none of them are broken. There is apparently an experiment you can do. You could buy a packet of wheat crunchies, put it on the top of your rucksack or suitcase. Go on a transatlantic flight, you arrive in Orlando, open your rucksack, open your wheat crunchies, they're all still intact. I have to say, the last few days I've been looking for some to find out what on earth is in them to give them this amazing property. They are very hard and durable. I don't know if any scientists have thought of any other further uses for that, but That was 2 bags of Worcester sauce flavoured wheat crunchies, 1 bag of crispy bacon flavoured wheat crunchies, 1 bag of crispy bacon flavoured wheat crunchies, a 50-gram pack, 2 bags of Golden Wonder rib and sauce flavour knickknacks. Now, there are a few knickknacks here. 3 bags of Golden Wonder scampi and lemon flavoured knickknacks, 1 bag of Golden Wonder barbecue sauce flavoured knickknacks, which, interestingly enough, don't feature the traditional knickknacks abbreviand in the flavour there. 1 bag of nice and spicy flavoured knickknacks. That, I believe, is about all the knickknacks there are. This abbreviand, N apostrophe, appeared quite a lot when we were preparing the supper book. But what isn't actually in the book, and what I've since discovered in researching knickknacks, is that they do rank among one of the more unethical crisps you can buy. Knickknacks first came to Britain in 1982, where they were originally marketed by Golden Wonder. They were produced before that by a company called Simba Foods, and they were invented in South Africa, where they were named after a basketball move. What really appeals to me about this is that 1982 was the height of the anti-apartheid movement. So there we all were, saying, I'm not going to eat those oranges, and damn those pears, because they come from South Africa. But I don't remember or recall anyone saying, we can't eat knickknacks, because, you know, they're part of this overseas fascist regime. Which illustrates to me the fact that, while we're very quick to point out the evils of the great corporations, we're less speedy when it comes to pointing the finger at ourselves, and willing to look the other way when it comes to tasty snack treats. I managed to track down a little list here of the other flavours of knickknacks, one of which I've forgotten about. There's scampi lemon, nice spicy, rib saucy, whatever that means, pickle onion, which I presume must be something different from pickled onion, pickle onion. And I don't know if anyone recalls cream cheesy knickknacks. Those were really, truly awful, awful crisps. 1 bag of Co-op mini poppadoms. There are quite a few poppadoms in the crisp chapter of the supper book, although there are obviously some other poppadoms included elsewhere in the curry chapter and so forth. But because these poppadoms came packaged as crisps, I've included them here. Although researchers have showed, due to the low moisture content and the puffed structure of the mini poppadom, the crispness factor is high. But a mini poppadom is, strictly speaking, not a crisp, even though there is a combined relation between the two. These interrelations between crisps and poppadoms add more complexity to the taxonomy of starchy snack systems, and one must resort to melt viscosity in order to properly differentiate the two. The melt viscosity of a poppadom will be higher than that of any given crisp. Melt viscosity is a term from plastics, which refers to the speed at which a substance moves once it's been melted. So one can only imagine the scientists out there who are busy melting poppadoms and then measuring the speed at which the subsequent fluid passes past a particular marker. The mind boggles. 4 35-gram bags of spicy tomato-flavoured wheat crunchies. 1 bag of prawn cocktail flavour Walker's Quavers. I just thought I'd point out here, because I just came across this totally by accident the other day, that Quavers is a Middle English word referring to a trill when you're singing. So if you go, la, this is actually a quaver. But what I also did find out is that Pringles and Quavers are made of virtually exactly the same stuff, except in Pringles, the extruded goo which forms the Pringle is fried. And in Quavers, it's actually put under very high pressure with steam, and then the steam is released and a Quaver bursts into being. 1 bag of really cheesy flavour Walker's Whatsits corn puffs. Whatsits. So these are another corn snack, which someone actually alerted me the other day to a truly disgusting picture on the internet, which was someone who crumbled up Whatsits and was actually sniffing them through a straw. It was when I was looking at this cheesy flavour packet of Whatsits that I started to ask the question, which I presume has been crossed to all our minds at some point, as to what sort of cheese are we supposed to be eating when we're eating a cheesy flavoured crisp? I mean, is it cheddar, Gruyere, Emmental, Gouda? Who knows? And actually, if you stop and think about it, they really taste damn all like cheese. They're just covered in this sort of flaky powder stuff. I don't know if there's anyone that thinks that a cheesy what's it tastes like cheese. The scientists who come up with this have obviously decided that it does. One other little what's it fact I've come across is a what's it is now apparently a nickname used among young women for a girl who wears too much orange foundation, which gives her skin that kind of radioactive orangey glow that what's it's have. Walkers, we all have suspected for a long time how evil and nasty they are. There was a leaked document which was sent from their advertising, the advertisers that they employ, to the management of management of Walkers in 2003, which came to the attention of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Health. This was intended to be a private brief, in which the media advertising company said, concerning children of 4 to 9 year olds, what they wanted their advert to suggest was, what's its are for me, I'm going to buy them when I get the chance, and in the meantime, I'm going to pester mum for them the next time she goes shopping, which is incredible. I don't think anyone would really be surprised that that cynicism is actually out there and going on. What's it, of course, another extruded snack. This this word actually never appears on crisp packets, but it's everywhere in crisp websites. If you want to get a handle on what extrusion is, think of a Play-Doh. You get these little machines where you put Play-Doh and you pull a lever down and it comes out in a kind of star shape. That's the extrusion process, and that's what happens with Pringles and Watsits and how other many of our favourite crisps are formed. One bag of Walker's spicy tandoori masala flavoured poppadom bites, eaten by me. One bag of Walker's ready salted crisps, a.k.a. the Big Eat. One bag of barbecue beef flavoured hula hoops. There's a lot to be said about hula hoops. I have a friend, a poet friend, Elspeth Murray, who put on her blog recently that this summer she's actually started putting hula hoops in salads instead of croutons. And I think that's an idea that could in fact really take off. Against hula hoops, it has actually been discovered as recently as last year that they're one of the very few crisps to contain some products called acrylamides. Now, you don't really need to know what they are, but you do need to know that they are, when they break down in the body, that they produce ammonia, which is not something that the body's great with dealing with. The reason that they appear in so few crisps, and actually, interestingly enough, also Tesco ginger nuts, is that acrylamides only form at very, very high temperatures, which are used to fry hula hoops and, funnily enough, Pringles as well. As I say, they decompose naturally to form ammonia, but also produce carbon monoxide. And these were just discovered to be in crisps, such as hula hoops, last year in Sweden. I don't know if some hula hoops got to Sweden, but there you have it. The amazing thing about this, the fact of these acrylamides, is it doesn't need to advertise on the packet that they're there, because they're not there when the producers put them in. They're just there when they come out. So this is a sort of developing area of food technology. These cancer-forming chemicals, which suddenly appear during the process once the other various chemicals have broken down and done their various reactions. One bag of Walker's Squares, salt and vinegar flavoured potato snack. I don't think I'm really going to be going into why Square Crisps suddenly changed their name to Squares after Walker's. They're a very long and messy subject, and I've never met anyone that's been able to explain it. Even Gary Lineker, in his nightly sort of extolling of the virtues of these crisps, has been silent when I've emailed him on the subject. Three and a half bags of salt and vinegar discos. One bag of Tesco plain poppadoms with a strapline, authentic Indian snack. There are incidentally a lot of straplines in the supper book, generally because I've found them to be hilarious. The Watsits, for example, came with the strapline best ever. The barbecue beef came with the amazingly powerful suggestion, get a load of them. And it's got these puns working in the back of people's minds. And Square Crisp came with the strapline, as square as you like. One bag of ready salted original hula hoops. Quite a lot of the 500 footnotes in the sort of book are actually trying to get to the bottom of this constant use of the word original in foodstuffs. One bag of Walker's ready salted crisps. One handful of lightly salted kettle chips. Now, as we get through the list, these handfuls and pickings start to appear, because although it is actually completely impossible to finally, once and for all, itemise everything that you've eaten or drunk, I did make as noble an effort as I could to do so. which is why in the various six notebooks that I used to make this list, I found myself scribbling a handful of kettle chips and such like. Hulups, interestingly, on their website say that you're supposed to get 25 to 30 hula hoops in the packet, and the amount of times I've tested that, I can't tell you. One bag of Walker's gently infused lime and Thai spices flavoured crisps, one bag of unidentified loose chili crackers, three bags of salt and vinegar flavour hula hoops, two bags of bacon and ketchup flavour hula hoops, one bag of Osem barbecue-flavoured Basili crisp hoops. Another theme in the supper book is, of course, trying the foods of the various places I've visited, which is a necessity. So these crisps were actually purchased and enjoyed in Israel, where Osem are a kosher producing company that own about 14 factories and produce about 1,000 different products that you and I can normally buy, but in kosher form. So these crisp hoops from Osem were actually the kosher version of hula hoops. And I don't know if it was due to poor production methods or the rabbinical blessing or whatever else, but they were not nice at all and no competition at all. A handful of ridged crisps, 42 sour cream and chive Pringles. I do remember this particular event. I do remember having the time to count out the 42 Pringles that I ate at it. One bag of Cantonese black bean and spring onion crackers. Although these aren't made out of potato. The footnote for this, obviously, I'd like to read this footnote because I think it's pertinent to crisps in general. It's about potatoes. The footnote says, black bean and spring onion crackers do not count towards your 5 portions of fruit and veg a day for the simple reason that this product contains only tiny, tiny quantities of both. Since 2003, the British Department of Health has been mercilessly nagging the population of the UK to eat 5 portions of fruit and veg per day, and have created logos, portion indicators, local initiatives and school schemes to this end. Health ministers stunned the public shortly after the scheme began when they announced that the potato was not a vegetable, an assertion which had to be revised when they opened a dictionary to find out that it was. Potatoes were excluded, however, because spuds provide mainly carbohydrate in the form of starch, and ministers feared that the public would follow their advice by eating 5 bags of crisps a day or 5 packets of chips. Incidentally, on the subject of chips and crisps, there's a broad benchmark to know how much fat you're eating when you're eating crisps, and it's largely 1 milliliter of fat per 1 gram of crisps. So your average packet contains 35 grams. And that would be a sound 35 millilitres of fat. The reason this is so easy is because the potato contains zero fat, so it's very easy for people to gauge how much fat are in these products. And I don't know if you remember a commercial a few years ago in which a child was seen to be drinking out of a bottle of cooking oil because the government had quite rightly estimated that feeding your wee ones crisps is equivalent to feeding them an extra 5 litres of cooking oil a year. A very conservative estimate from the government, I have to say, but we'll come back to that at the end. Let's try and get to the end of this endless list of crisps. One helping of Walker's Peking spare rib and 5-spice crackers, which I've estimated at 12 grams. One bag of Walker's Sensations char-grilled steak and peppercorn sauce flavoured crisps. These ones I think I actually had to try because this was about the most intricate description of crisp that I've ever tried and come across. The description in the packet said, all the best of a well-seared succulent steak is perfectly complemented with a creamy and slightly tangy black pepper sauce. One bag of Smith's scampi fries, one bag of McCoy's Thai sweet chicken flavoured crisps. This bag of crisps came with the strap line on it, if you thought McCoy's thick potato chips couldn't get any better, think again. While we were working on the book, my typesetter added, and I've written it here, many of our nation's thinkers were caught out on this one. One bag of McCoy's Chinese sizzling beef flavour potato chips, two bags of Golden Wonder prawn cocktail crisps. Now, there are quite a few Golden Wonder crisps coming in this list, and I'm going to have to take a few minutes to talk about Golden Wonder, and you can already tell I've gone into a kind of nostalgic tone. basically due to their, I think most people have a certain age, at least like a fondness for Golden Wonder, which I hear, I've not actually had a chance to look into this, are not really available in England at all anymore, but are still available in Scotland, I presume because they originated in Arbroath. The company started in 1947. It was a baker that started making them after he'd finished his baker shift. His name was William Alexander, which is a dreadfully common name in the northeast of Scotland, it appears. And it was actually Golden Wonder were the first people to introduce proper flavouring into crisps with cheese and onion in 1962, although that had in fact already been pioneered by Tato in Ireland a few years before. But it was Golden Wonder that were most hard hit by Smith's throwing the cat among the pigeons in the late 90s. And I think we all know what I'm talking about when I start to refer to the colour of the bags of crisps. There was always a gentleman's agreement between producers that cheese and onion were green, salt and vinegar were light blue, dark blue? Okay. Light blue, and ready salted were dark blue. And I even remember, even the sort of local producers of crisps would still adhere to this. I mean, you buy all these tiny, poxy little flavours and manufacturers, and they would all adhere to this. But it did actually work miracles for Walkers. It was one of the things, aside from their very kind of merciless acquisition of other crisp brands, which did serve them well. And I do, for one, remember buying a packet of cheese and onion by mistake. And the reason I was aware of that is because I don't like cheese and onion crisps, and I thought I was buying some salt and vinegar. The other thing I associate with Golden Wonder is something that is also long gone, the green crisp, which you used to get a long, long time ago. The green crisp, which was kind of the savoury snack equivalent of the kind of mythical bad brown acid that was reportedly going around Woodstock. And these green crisps, which you would almost try, but tasted really foul. But part of me thinks, well, you know, they are an indicator of how, you know, pleasure can mutate readily into distress, and which is a lesson that every child needs to learn and discover, I guess. There's a lot to say about Golden Wonder, but this is also a very long list. And we're nearly at the end of it, you'll be glad to hear. One Walker's Ready Salted Crisp. I don't remember when or where I ate that, but I always took the time to write it down. It does bring to mind, though, a little fact I discovered just the other day, which I'm quickly going to share with you, which is the largest potato crisp in the world, because we need to know about that. So this was made in 1991 at the Procter & Gamble headquarters in Cincinnati, Ohio. Made by a team of their food engineers. The crisp, which disgustingly is still for display in their museum. I mean, that's like nearly 20 years ago. Measures 25 by 14 inches and weighs 5.4 ounces. It contains 920 calories and is the equivalent of 80 regular Pringles. I think the shocking fact about that is it only takes 80 Pringles to get up to 920 calories, which is, you know, enough to keep most people going for quite a long time. One bag of Walker's salt and vinegar crisps. One bag of Walker's Worcester sauce crisps. One bag of Golden Wonder sausage and tomato flavoured crisps. This packet of crisps, this particular packet of crisps, came with a quote in the packet, which I think is one of the reasons why they might have, you know, suffered so brutally at the hands of Walkers. This is actually a verbatim quote from what it says on the packet. They, the potatoes, are lightly peeled to help retain their goodness and cooked in sunflower oil to bring you a crisp that's lower compared to Golden Wonder crisps sold prior to July 2003 in saturated fat, which compared to the average contents of a crisp packet today is, you know, just meaningless and, you know, far too grammatical English. This packet of Hula Hoops, I don't know how I'm doing for time. Oh, plenty of time. Contains, you know, the obligatory instructions to eat healthily, with the sort of bewildering array of energy, fat and sodium statistics. Directions to a 1-2-3 healthy balance website, which is, even includes exercises, the list of ingredients, obviously, the time they were packaged. Now, there's a sell-by date. I can't, from the what's stamped here, actually figure out the day they were packaged. I can figure out it was 2009. But I can also see that they were sealed at 11:49, which is just mind-boggling. the promise, the manufacturer's promise, another kind of obligation it seems these days, and this, which I'm sure Mr. Bell will not want you to try afterwards. It is a rather revolting game called Hula Ball. What you do is you empty your hula hoops out, take the empty packet, open it up and place it on the nearest flat surface, draw a penalty spot, and then start flicking your hula hoops back into the bag. First to five wins! Disgusting. Three bags of Golden Wonder Heinz tomato ketchup flavoured crisps. I've always suspected that tomato ketchup flavoured crisps came into being during one of these brainstorming sessions, which we can only imagine go on behind closed door with people in crisps, people in suits coming up with, you know, names like, I know, Sunny Delight, you know, and yeah, it's great, man. And so I've always figured that tomato sauce flavoured crisps came about when they were really stuck, and then, you know, salt and vinegar. What else do you add to chips? Oh, I got it. Tomato sauce. And this is how they came up with that one. It's just a pet theory. 8 salsa and mesquite flavoured kettle chips. There's a few things that need to be said about kettle chips as well. The first being that they advertise with what I think is the holy grail of all food descriptors, which is the phrase hand-cooked. And we're led to believe that these guys in aprons stirring away these vats of things and shaking, you know, I don't know. What I do know is, because part of the supper book has also been dirt digging, and, you know, the more ethical and holier-than-thou food company purports to be, the keener I am to find out some dirt on them. I didn't have to go very far with Kettle Foods, who actually employed strike breakers a few years ago to... they employed a company called... Omega Training, where this American company who come in and attempt to brainwash your staff into believing that unionism is red and evil. And they presented seminars to 340 of the people who stir the vats of crisps in Kettle Chips Norwich plant, saying, you know, what great conditions they were and how they didn't need to join Unite Union, which of course begs the question, if they worked under such great conditions, then what was wrong with joining a union. But other than the very earnest pictures of the bearded guys who, you know, founded Kettle Chips, this is great on their story, on their website, this is a great story of how they founded it in 1978. He says, we came to Britain in 1987 and discovered the British love of snack treats, which is just insane. How they didn't know about it before, I do not know. Because I think, actually, certainly due to the variety of flavours, obviously not the size of packets, that we probably love snack treats more than the Americans. 2 1/4 tubes of Texas barbecue sauce Pringles eaten by me. That comes to a whole 225 grams. 8 Shikar mini poppadoms eaten by me. 4 ready salted crisps from a work colleague. All been there. 4 handfuls of spicy chili kettle chips. 2 paprika crisps. 1 lightly salted kettle chip. The pickings of Eddie Gibbons crisps in the Bow Bar. I'll be in there too. I thought I'd mention Eddie by name, because there's quite a few people who gave me food, as we're all given food during our day-to-day, who needs to be mentioned in the book. 1 17-gram canister of sour cream and onion Pringles. The guy who invented the canister for Pringles, now Pringles were actually the first that came up with this canister, which they applied for the patent for in 1966 and got, finally, in 1970. The guy who invented that, Fred Bauer, his name was, remember, he died in 2006. His ashes, yeah, you guessed it, they are buried in one of these Pringle containers. They're buried. And he was so proud of his invention. He requested that his children bury him in an empty Pringles container. Okay, I'll leave your mind to do the rest. I don't need to ask the obvious question. But yes, they must have cleaned it. It's a disgusting thought. The disgusting thought, there's a graveyard in Cincinnati with that poor guy lying there in the decomposing can of Pringles. 1 bag of Walker's char-grilled steak-flavoured crinkle crisps, 40 grams. 1 bag of Walker's tomato sauce-flavoured crisps. 1 bag of Golden Wonder ready salted crisps, 1 bag of lightly salted kettle chips, and 2 tubes of sour cream and onion Pringles, which are the last thing on the list. I'm going to have to come to the heavy, heady Pringles debate immediately. So I tell you, all dying to hear if they are crisps or not. I'm afraid I need to quote from the VAT Act of 1994. The reason that it is such a hotly contested issue as to whether Pringles are or are not crisps is that VAT is not liable on food at all, payable on food at all, apart from with very few exceptions, one of which is crisps. So obviously Procter & Gamble are very keen to present to HMRC that their product is not crisps. The customs are obviously very keen to argue that they are. And this debate has been going on for quite a few years and has gone to the High Court, gone to appeal, come back, and has actually gone to the stage of High Court judges having to decide whether, three High Court judges having to decide whether Pringles are crisps. So first of all, I'm going to quote from the VAT Act just so you can get the general idea. Any of the following, when packaged for human consumption without further preparation, namely potato crisps, potato sticks, potato puffs, and similar products made from the potato, or from potato flour, or from potato starch, and savoury products obtained by the swelling of cereals or cereal products, and salted or roasted nuts, other than nuts in a shell. Liable. So, as I say, three judges were asked to decide whether Pringles were crisps. A VAT tribunal from the Revenue and Customs obviously decided they were crisps. The amount at stake, incidentally, was £100 million sterling in back VAT and an estimated £20 million a year going on. So there's obviously quite a lot riding in this. The High Court judge, as I say, said they were not crisps. So the appeal judges at the High Court have actually reinstated the tribunal decision. Although Procter & Gamble, as far as I can see from my recent following of this article, this story, haven't paid their VAT yet. A little quote from the Daily Telegraph from the last time I was reading this. During the hearing of the case last month, Roderick Cordura, QC, argued that the product should have a sufficient content of potato to give it a quality of what he called potatoness. He said, regular Pringles, which contain 42% potato, 33% fat and flour, cannot be said to be made from potato. As we say, the appeal judges disagreed. There is more than enough potato content for it to be a reasonable view that it is made from potato, said Lord Justice Jacob. Great. So, I've given you the list of crisps that I ate in 1 year, which is pretty awesome. How does it measure up with the UK's national statistics for how many crisps we eat? Has been very difficult to find out. First of all, the total. With allowances made for crumbs, human error, crisps behind teeth, crisps lost to the wind, and miscalculated brags, the crisp tonnage for the year was 2.8 kilograms. I'm just going to read the closing comments from the chapter. The truth is that the only people who know how many crisps they've eaten are those that don't eat any crisps at all. It's these fortunate people of iron will that don't have to worry about eating undue amounts of monosodium glutamate, tartrazine, or any of the processed cheese powders that are made from animal rennet. Walkers are worth singling out, especially since their spokesman said that in 2001 they sold enough crisps to cover the whole surface area of Holland. An image I'm sure the Dutch cherish. For the Food Commission's Greedy Star Award in 2003, parents and other interviewees criticised pop and sports stars who had used their status to promote fatty, sugary and salty foods to children. The band S Club 7 were nominated for their support of Sunny Delight, as was Britney Spears for promoting Pepsi. The winner, however, was Gary Lineker, with his promotion of Walker's Crisps, whose management company defended his actions with a statement saying, crisps are a useful source of energy and form part of a balanced diet alongside foods such as vegetables and fruit. Fruit, vegetables, crisps. It's statements such as these that remind me why I wrote the Supper Book. I love the ease with which we can agree with a statement, because we know that nothing in the great world of printed claims is in any way at all verifiable. While I'm at it, I've just actually noticed, before I finish, that Pepsi and Britney Spears are actually owned, or actually own Lay's, who own Walkers. But that's a story for another day. I think everything's just owned by one great big extruding machine.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, after that, you might feel a bit crisped out, but I'm sure all those varieties that Peter mentions are available from most shops, if you still feel like eating them, that is. The Supper Book is available from Amazon and selected bookshops, or you can get it directly from lemingtonbooks.com. Well, that's it for our second podcast. Thanks very much to Peter Burnett for taking part in the festival, and to festival director Hannah Adcock and programme director Peggy Hughes. My name's Colin Fraser. Thanks for listening. The track we used for this podcast is Trouble Scene from NWD, released under a Creative Commons licence. For more information, go to www.ludabeats.com/u007.